the smaller units and those kinds of things because, you know, things are booming and money is flowing. And you don't think about those affordable houses until you get to the point where the boom period has come to an end. Is that how that works?
Well, really what happened was the cost of construction was such that if you built something at the full cost of construction, particularly as construction costs have increased rapidly in the last couple of years, the facility that you built, the residential units you built, were not affordable under the definition of affordable, meaning that that people who were earning less than the median income could afford to live there. Right.
Right.
And so the definition of affordable is lower than the median income, but it's basically defined as lower income individuals. And so what happened then out there in the general marketplace was that during this period of boom, the cost of rent went up as well. So as people who rent know, the lease rates were going up annually. And the number of apartments that were available that were charging a lease that could be affordable was going down every year as rents were increased. So affordable housing today is basically something that needs to be subsidized by the government. And there are affordable housing subsidized programs that are carried out pursuant to grants and incentives created by government. And so today, affordable housing is largely dependent on government conduct, government grants, and happily, the marketplace is responding in that regard, but it's not responding fast. There is definitely a shortage of affordable housing.
And there's also a pushback from areas that don't want affordable housing in their areas. And, you know, that's been an ongoing issue and that government has attempted to address. But, you know, I'm sure that plays a role in it, too.
It's a little bit right. It's a little bit like redlining. It's not official redlining. But, yeah, the not in my backyard movement that doesn't want to have various kinds of things that are done by the government, done in their area, is very aggressive and active with respect to affordable housing. People, you know, it's probably embedded a little bit in racism. Affordable housing might be disproportionately housing people that are of color of some kind. And so, yeah, there's been a difficulty in getting affordable housing approved for construction in municipalities around the country.
And you know, Sandy, the part of it and the pushback because, and you know, people of color and those kinds of things, if people really gave it real thought, they would understand that, you know, the majority of the people who are going to be needing, you know, the affordable housing can't be people of color because of the sheer numbers, the numbers of people. But that thought process is out there, and that's enough to lead people to be against affordable housing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a sorry commentary, but there clearly is resistance in that regard. And I think that affordable housing is being constructed quite easily in homogeneous communities of homogeneous ethnicity. And it's much more difficult in urban settings where there is a lack of homogeneity with respect to ethnicity. And there is more resistance politically in that situation. So, it's important that we get affordable housing. It's interesting because this problem crops up in prosperous places as well. You can go to places like Aspen, Colorado. Aspen is a place of immense prosperity and wealth. And one of the problems is all the people need to work in restaurants and all these things that are necessary to allow people in Aspen to live like Aspenites want to live can't afford to live in or near Aspen because it's so very, very expensive. And the same thing is happening all over the West. I've got a sister who lives in Bozeman, Montana. Bozeman, Montana has suddenly become a fashionable place to live for people from California with money. And now the people who work in Bozeman, Montana are finding it very difficult to find affordable housing.
You know, Sandy, all of these different things. Here's another subject that I really wanted to hear your opinion on. And this is actually Bill de Blasio. It's commentary, and this is in The Hill. Nearly one in three Americans say it may soon be necessary to take up arms against the government. One in three? I mean, we've come to that point, Sandy, that one in three Americans believe that they may have to take up arms against the government. A majority of Americans say the U.S. government is corrupt, and almost a third say it may soon be necessary to take up arms against it, according to a new poll from the University of Chicago's Institute of Politics. Two-thirds of Republicans and independents say the government is corrupt and rigged against everyday people like me, according to the poll, compared to 51% of liberal voters. Sandy, if two-thirds of Republicans, or i.e. conservatives, whatever, believe that the government is totally corrupt, and at some point, and then one-third of them believe we've got to pick up arms. Sandy, I know our government is listening, right? I mean, our government is aware of this.
Well, apparently our government isn't listening to the people, because it isn't just conservatives who don't trust their government and think it's corrupt. I think that...
But I mean picking up the arms.
Picking up the arms part, but I'm just saying there are lots of people in this country who are disaffected from government. And it was sort of the epiphany I was talking about last week that I had, the realization that government, people have lost trust in government. Right. On the left, they don't trust it because it's not delivering to them what they want. And on the right, they don't trust it because it's government. And because it's government, you know, they don't want government intruding into their lives at all. And on the left, they want government supporting lives to a much greater extent. And therefore we have a broad array of people who don't trust government. I keep referencing this guy I sat next to the plane on flying from Newark down to Florida, who was talking about being armed all the time because something was bad was going to happen in America and he was going to be armed when it happened. And I realized later, he's probably one of those people who thinks he needs to bear arms potentially against the government, because in his mind, the bad thing that's going to happen is going to happen from the standpoint of government taking action. So I think it's frightening. I think that government is losing its credibility in America, and when it does, we lose the rule of law. Respect for government is ultimately respect for the rule of law.
You know, Sandy, I got to be honest. I'm one of those who have a difficult time when I look at things. Prime example, we've talked about several of those things this morning. We're talking about the cost of medicine. And yet we see what's going on, and we have a government that seems to be powerless because its commitment to lobbyists comes before its commitment to the people. And so that doesn't mean I'm ready to pick up arms. But the fact that we're at this point, Sandy, and I don't know if in the last 100 years, if there's ever been a time where you've got people who just will not believe. And you know, Tom always comes on and says government is the people, you know, of the people, by the people, and for the people. But it's a representative government, Sandy. And so it's the people, excuse me, who represent the government that we're talking about, right? I mean, the government isn't some, you know, some human being. You know, it's people who represent our government that we can't trust, or that we're not having enough trust in. And that's where, even when elections come into play, like we're talking about, Sandy, coming up, when those people then become slaves to lobbyists, how do you change that?
Well, I do think a fundamental problem in America is that government... The New Deal was a very important experience, but it didn't really deliver to Americans all of the value that government can provide like it provides in Europe. So, you know, we don't have broad health care available to all. We don't have education supported in the same way. We don't have pensions, child care. If we were getting government services like that, the value of government would be more apparent to the people and to all of the people, but we don't. And so we have the progressives who are frustrated because government doesn't seem to be able to do any of those things. And we have the conservatives who don't want government to intrude in their life at all. And it's because they can argue that government, all that government does do is intrude in their lives in unpleasant ways. And that's because we aren't providing all these other services.
You know, hold that thought, Sandy. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.